Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening, everyone. I think we'll get started now. First of all, I want to thank everyone for coming to the Tattered Cover Bookstore this evening, and thank you for supporting your local and independent businesses, because it really does make a difference. Tonight's author comes to us from across the pond, where she, during the day, is a professor at a university in southeastern Spain. But we're here because of what she does in her spare time. In this wonderful new novel, now available in paperback, The Time in Between, tonight's author does a great job of, well, several things. One, she was inspired by family stories and then applied her crafts, her skills as a master researcher to fill out this amazing novel set between the two wars, in a way, between the Spanish Civil War and World War II, but following an amazing heroine as she makes her way from Madrid to Morocco, and a lot of upset and ruin and despair there, but she builds herself back up so that by the time she comes back to Madrid, she's very much in demand, to the extent that she is able to see the enemy and also really begin to combat the enemy as well. I think that's all I'm going to say about that. The book itself is an international bestseller, first in Spain, of course, and then I think translated now in 20 languages, I believe. I think that's true. So 20-something languages, I believe. So without further ado, I'd like you to help me welcome Maria Duenas.
Thank you so much, Derek, and thank you for being here tonight, and thank you to the Tattered Cover for hosting this event tonight. This is my, I've been like my 10th day in the U.S. I came last Sunday, not this Sunday, but the previous one, and I started in New York, moving westwards all the time, and wherever I've been, and they have asked me, where are you going later? And anytime I mentioned that one of the stops was Denver, everybody told me, oh, you are going to the Tattered Cover. Such a great place. So I'm so happy. I'm so happy I finally made it. I'm so happy for being here. And thank you really for being here to spend some time together talking about my book, which they've told me that some of you have already read it, some of you still haven't, so I won't discover too many things for you, okay? I want you to keep the intrigue, and I want you to read the book with passion and with an interest in learning what's going on after every page turn. Okay, so what I'm going to do is to let you know what is behind the book. I mean, all the process that I followed in order to create my story, how all the different ideas came to my mind, how I put everything in order, and then how I started creating the story. And it all started with some family memories. My mother and her family lived in Morocco, in northern Africa, for many years. My grandfather arrived in Morocco in the 1920s when the Spanish protectorate started. It was sort of a colonial situation at that time. In the first half of the 20th century, as you know, Europe, different countries in Europe had still many different colonies around the world, and Spain only had this little part of Morocco. The southern part was attached to France, and the northern part was assigned to Spain. So there were a lot of Spaniards who moved there as military people and the business people and the workers and employees and people who worked for the Spanish administration. And one of them was my grandfather. So he arrived there, as I told you, in the mid-20s, and then he married and they started having a family, and the fifth of the kids of that family was my mother, who was born in 1940. And then the protectorate finished in 1956, and they went back to Spain in 1958. So when I was growing up, when I was living at home with my mom and with the whole family, every time she had to refer to her childhood, to her brothers, sisters, school, friends, everything, she would mention Morocco, North Africa, Tetuan, which was the capital city where she lived. So I grew up with all these ideas in my mind, with all those memories she shared with us, with all this names repeated over and over. And when I decided to write a novel, which is something that came to my mind quite late, because I never had the ambition of becoming a writer. I was just a university professor teaching my classes and doing my research and raising my kids at home. But one day I decided that I wanted to write something. I had always been a good reader. I have always worked with, I'm a linguist and a philologist, what we call in Spanish, a philologist, in sort of a linguist, so to put things in a easy way. And so I was used to working with language structures, with language patterns, and I always had sort of an avid imagination. So I decided to put these three together, my ability to create stories, my ability to work with a language, and my background as a reader, and I decided to write a story. And before I had any idea in my mind about the plot or the characters or anything at all, the only certainty I had was that I wanted to look back to that time of Spanish history in which thousands of Spaniards were living in Morocco, along with local population, along with some other expatriates from some other countries, in an atmosphere that more or less resembled, if you remember the movie Casablanca, like with the Europeans there, plus the Arabs there, plus everybody moving around with sorts of conspiracies and many people not really being very open and about who they were, where they came from, why they were there. So I wanted to recreate that world. Not that my mother's family were involved really in many conspiracies, but still, that was the sort of environment at that time, near the war, Second World War, Civil War. And so I decided to recreate all that world. So that was my first idea. And in order to get the information I needed, I started talking to other residents in Morocco at that time. And I started also doing some more formal research. I looked for old newspapers, academic articles, all type of history books, encyclopedias. And so I started getting information from here and there in order to rebuild that lost world. Because now it's, all the buildings, all the places that the Europeans built, both in Tetuan and in Tangiers, they're still there, but the population and the culture and the atmosphere and everything is 100% Moroccan and Muslim and Arabic, but still the some of the memory of where the Europeans were living was there. So I started getting data from here and there in order to construct my story, and that's how I found I learned about three fascinating historical characters, highly controversial, but at the same time, a great material for a novel. And I decided that I had somehow to I would make the effort to incorporate them, to integrate them into my novel. These three people were first Colonel Juan Luis Belvedere, who at the time of the Civil War was the High Commissioner of Spain in Morocco, and later our Civil War, Spanish Civil War, lasted from 1936 to 1939. It ended just a few months before Second World War broke up. So it's a succession of wars what we had at that time. So Juan Luis Belvedere, as I say, was High Commissioner, and then when our Civil War ended, he was nominated by Franco. Franco was the winner of the war, as you know. He was nominated as the Minister of Foreign Affairs. And this man, Juan Luis Belvedere, had a lover at that time, who was a British young woman, who persuaded him to adopt a pro-British position when he was the Minister of Foreign Affairs during the World War II, whereas Franco's government was pro-German. And the main, the closest advisor to Franco during that time was his brother-in-law, whose name was Ramón Serrano Suñer, who was the third historical character, I found out. So with this triangle of people who really existed and really lived the circumstance, the historical circumstances of the moment, I thought that I almost have material enough for my novel. Imagine, it was the year 1939-1940. Franco had won the Civil War. Spain was completely devastated. There was a lot of hunger and misery and repression everywhere. And Spain didn't participate actively in World War II, but there were a lot of conspiracies going on in Spain, a lot of secret service, both German and British, around, because neither the British nor the Germans wanted Spain to join the other band in the war, because it was the access to the Mediterranean. So it was strategically, Spain had to become neutral, because otherwise it would be terrible for both bands if it finally joined one or the other. So imagine this regime, and then the Minister of Foreign Affairs is pro-British because he has a British lover, and the Minister of the Interior of Domestic Affairs, who happens to be Franco's brother-in-law, their wives were sisters, is completely pro-German. And in between, we have this English woman who has nothing to do, apparently, with Spain and its history, but is there playing a role, too. So I thought this triangle of historical characters was just fascinating, material enough for a novel. But still, I decided to incorporate them, as I said, to my pot. I had like a pot with all the ingredients I was putting in order to cook something, which I didn't know what it was going to be. So I had the territories, the places, the cities I wanted to integrate: Tetuan, Tangiers in Morocco, Madrid in Spain, later Lisbon in the war. I had the historical characters: Serrano Suñer, Franco's brother-in-law, Belvedere, the High Commissioner, later minister, his lover, Rosalind Fox, the British lady, put them inside. But still, I didn't have an idea of how to give some coherence to the story, because what I knew was that I didn't want to write a purely historical novel. I wanted to write a fiction. And in order to do so, what I decided was to create a fully fictional character. And this character was Sira Quiroga, the protagonist of the book, a young dressmaker to whom we meet in Madrid in 1935, right a few months before the beginning of the Civil War, being a very young, quite innocent girl, working class girl, with a very, very humble life, with a very common future ahead, with a boyfriend who really loves her but cannot offer her anything in particular to change her life, and with us, she's the daughter of a single mother. She will meet her father later, but she grows up as the child of a single mother because her parents belonged to a different social position, and at that time inter-class marriage was impossible in Spain. So this is the Sira Quiroga. We find a girl with very, very limited perspectives for her future life, until she happens to meet a man, which, as commonly happens, well, sometimes, not commonly, but sometimes happen, is the most inappropriate man. But she madly falls in love with him, and from that moment on, everything changes in her life. She will, in order to start a new life with him, she will leave behind everything. Her job, her boyfriend, her mother, her friends, her hometown, her future, and she will break with everything just to move with him to Morocco, to Tangiers initially, and then she will move to Tetuan. And just to find out that 3-4 months later, this man is going to abandon her. I'm telling you all these details because they happen at the beginning of the novel. I won't go on. Just in page 30, all these things I'm telling you are over. So just it seems that that many things are happening, but this is just the beginning. So she follows him to Morocco, and a few months later he abandons her. Penniless, sick, betrayed, infant. With all the worst circumstances around her, plus the impossibility for Sira to go back to Spain, because now the civil war has already broken up, and in order to go from Spain to Morocco, you have to cross the Strait of Gibraltar, the sea, and there are no boats going back and forth for civilians, just military boats. So she cannot go back. She has nothing with her. She knows no one in that land, and she has to survive. She has to struggle to survive, and so she does. She moves to Tetuan almost accidentally, and now I have her in my mother's hometown, the place where I wanted her to be. And she starts meeting new people, on the one hand, new fictional characters that I create for her, like Candelaria, who is the owner of the boarding house where she will be living, or Felix, who is a friend, who is a neighbor, who will become a friend and will act sort of a Pygmalion for her because she didn't have any chances to have any education. So she needs someone to teach her about everything, about life in all senses. And at the same time, she will also meet some historical figures, and among them mainly Rosalind Fox, High Commissioner Baybeather's lover, who will become her closest friend. And she will be the one who will push her. He will persuade her to take an active role in the second war Syria is going to suffer, which is not war, the Spanish Civil War, which will be over by that time, but World War II. And so in order to do something that I'm not going to tell you what it is, but for the Allies during during World War II, she will move back to Madrid. So closing in that way, like a circular structure for the novel. It starts in Madrid, it goes to Morocco, and then she when Shira goes back to Madrid, that's like closing the circle. Although she won't go back to that old Madrid in which she was brought up, but to a new section of Madrid, which at that time, right during our post-war, when Madrid was completely devastated and full of sadness and poverty and depression and repression, she will integrate within a community of wealthy people, prosperous people, aristocrats, diplomatic members of the diplomatic body from other different countries. And this is not, she won't do this because she doesn't want to go back to her old friends and her old life, but because she goes back to Madrid with a mission to accomplish. And that's how we will say goodbye to Sira after 600 pages. She transformed into someone else because she will have a new identity. She will have a much more open, sophisticated attitude toward the world. She will be a completely different woman, but still she will never betray herself. She will still keep the essence of that young, naive girl we met on page one. And that's the story of Sira Quiroga. That's the story of The Time in Between, a book that I wrote. I wrote in a couple of years, and it was published in Spain in 2009. And initially, I didn't have any idea of how readers would accept the book, how generous would be the readers' response to my book. And it started as it was a surprise, but from the very beginning, it was like a word of mouth thing, and readers started to let friends, family, other readers know about the book, and it was like a spider web. It became to grow, and here we are, 25 languages later, and 3 years later, with the paperback edition of this book. There is also a TV series already filmed in Spain, which will be on air in September, and plans of the television series. It will have the Spanish name, which is El Tiempo Entre Costuras. Yeah, because the name in English, the translation of the title is a bit different. It should be The Time Between Seams or Stitches. Yeah, between what? That's what everybody asked me. But, well, they decided that it sounded better. I think it's a beautiful title, too. Although in the British edition, they have completely changed it. It's called The Seamstress. So, yeah.
But that is good, because
yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense. But well, anyways, the television series will be El Tiempo Entre Costuras in Spanish initially, and then if it's bought by other markets, I don't know if they will change the title. I don't know. We are still waiting for this series to be featured in Spain, to be on the air in Spain, and we will see what happens. We will see. But I'm really, really very happy for having the opportunity of being here with you today, and really thank you very much. And I hope you enjoy the book if you read it. Thank you to all the ones who have already read it. And if you have any questions, comments, whatever, I'll be more than happy to answer. Yes.
Were there any other authors who especially influenced you? Any Spanish authors or English authors?
If there were any other authors who inspired me or who influenced me, well, many. In general terms, but no one in particular that I could say this or that author is my model and I want to write something similar to his or her work. But many of them, Spanish, Latin American, English, which is the literature I'm more familiar with, many of them from the classic, I don't know, from Shakespeare or Dickens or Cervantes or Galdós, to contemporary authors all over the world. Fortunate Jacinta, yeah, Galdós. No. Yeah, because Galdós belongs to our long tradition of storytellers. Yeah, he wrote like 100 novels in his life. Big novels, things going on all the time, and with a historical background in behind. So yeah, it's sort of the I'm very honored when someone says it's like following Galdós tradition or the big novelist, Spanish novelist tradition. Yeah, I mentioned Fortunata y Jacinta in the book. That's right. Yeah.
I thought that the couture things were very interesting. Do you have seamstress in your...
No. This is something that many people ask me, many readers, if I have any connection to the world of couture, if I have a seamstress in my family, or if my mother is a seamstress, who is not, or if I have a particular passion for fashion, and the answer is no. I decided that Sira, my protagonist, would be a seamstress because I needed a fully independent character, a woman who could make her own money and live with her own resources without any man or any family around. And at that time in Spain, late 30s, early 40s, there were not many possibilities for women. Women didn't work except at home, and there were no professions. I mean, maybe there were some teachers or some nurses, but that was basically it. And I decided that providing Sira with this profession, she could be financially autonomous, independent, and at the same time, I could provide her with the possibility of climbing up the social scale, because I wanted her to become friends with Rosalind Fox, who was the lover of the most powerful man in Morocco, and she was just a working class girl. So I thought that by means of her setting up her own business and becoming increasingly popular among the wives of the different prominent men around, they could establish the relationship. Rosalind was in need of clothes, Sira was in need of money, and they both were in need of friendship. They were really very, very lonely. So that's why I decided to make her a seamstress. But, I mean, I can sew a little bit, but not much, really.
I was curious about Baqueda. My book said he died in 57. That was
imprisoned. Was he in what?
Imprisoned?
No, Baqueder was when the question is if Colonel Baqueder was in prison before his death. No, he was nominated by Franco as the Minister of Foreign Affairs in 1939, in August 1939, and in October, early October 1940, he was out. I mean, he only was able to hold the position of the Minister of Foreign Affairs for 14 months because Franco persuaded by his brother-in-law, Serrano Suñer, who at the time was the Minister of the Interior, of Domestic Affairs, got rid of him because Franco and Serrano Suñer, they both thought that he wasn't pro-German enough. I mean, he had this British lover, and he had a very pro-British attitude, and they thought that they needed someone with a much stronger position. And this man was Serrano Suñer. So 1 or 2 days after Begbeder resigned, Serrano Suñer was nominated the new Minister of Foreign Affairs. And then Begbeder thought he was sent to prison for but not like, I don't know how you say this in English, when you are at home, you don't have freedom. That's it. And when you don't have the freedom to move around, but still, so that happened with him for a while. And then he was released and nothing happened. Even when he says, sometimes he mentions in some letters, in some of his correspondence, that he's scared, that he's afraid that they may kill him. But it never happened, hopefully. Rosalinda lived a very, very long life. She just died like 5 or 6 years ago. Yep, when she was 90-something. Yep. And she moved to southern Spain because she thought Begbeder was going to join her, and in the end he died much earlier. And she was living between southern Spain and England, going back and forth. A nephew of her, a niece of her, wrote me, and when she read the book and she knew that I had been researching the character, she told me that she was a fascinating woman, as I figure her out in the book. But at the same time, she told me that she had a terrible temper, and that she was quite difficult, particularly as she grew older. But still, I think she was a fascinating woman. Yep.
And the High Commissioner, was he really a lover of Morocco? He was in your book. Was he that kind
of man? Yeah. Begbeder was a real lover of Morocco. To the question of Begbeder being a real lover of Morocco, the answer is yes, completely. He was living in Morocco when he was much younger. Later, he went he lived in France, and he was working as the military attaché for the Spanish embassy in Berlin before World War II. So he lived out of Spain most of his life, and then he returned to Morocco, but that was the place he loved most, more even than Spain, because he was not very happy in Spain. I mean, he left the country when he was very young, like 17, 18, and he just returned as the Minister of Foreign Affairs. And he was able to speak Arabic. He had very good relationship with the Moroccan authorities, and he was absolutely in love with the country, with the language, with the history, with the culture, with the literature, with everything, Yeah, and he never felt happy in Madrid, never. He was missing all the time Morocco, every day.
Was he married?
He was married. Begbeder was married. He had a wife and a daughter who never joined him in Morocco, as far as I know. There is no biography of Begbeder written, so I just took pieces of information from here and there, from letters, from other people, what other people said about him. And as far as I know, they didn't join him in Morocco. And then later, I've met some people connected with the wife's family, and he was a big womanizer. I mean, Rosalind was one of his many lovers, and the wife was very, very strict, very Catholic, close-minded, and she couldn't stand his behavior, but they never divorced. In Spain, it was impossible. So, yeah. They never lived together thereafter, but they remained married until he died. Yeah. Hi.
I was wondering about the inspiration for the mother-daughter relationship in the book. So it was almost painful to read sometimes because it was so realistic, and I was wondering if you completely made that up.
Yes, the inspiration between mother and daughter is an invention. Yeah, because my own experience is completely different. I come from a big family, and Sira and her mother are just the two of them. And I thought it was interesting because I wanted to somehow show how the Civil War separated families. And was very, very painful for many people just because they happened to be in the wrong place or in different places. And I wanted to transmit that idea. And also I wanted to somehow to show how sometimes we have to pay for our wrong decisions, and then we can make for what we did wrong in the past. It's like a compensation. But there is no real inspiration. I mean, no real life inspiration. Probably my inspiration came from different people I've met here and there, and books, and many different circumstances. But I cannot mention one single relationship, mother-daughter, that has inspired me. Yeah. Thank you. Yep.
How is it for Americans to travel to Morocco?
Nowadays?
I know it's easy to go.
Yeah.
It's very nice.
Yeah, you've been there in Morocco?
Have you been back to this one?
Just many times. Yeah. If the question is if I've been back to Tetuan, yes, I've traveled to Tetuan on many occasions. I had been there before, and when I decided to write a book, before starting composing everything, I went back, and then every 3-4 months I've been traveling. And it's very easy to go there, and it's very safe. There are no problems at all. It's beautiful. It's easy, and the food is delicious. Sorry? Yeah, because they have French is like their second language, the language of education, the language of more, let's say, sophisticated people speak French. So almost everyone speak French. And in the north, particularly the old people who lived there while the Spaniards were there still can speak Spanish. And then younger people, they have been watching Spanish television for years, so they are great Spanish soccer fans, and they know many things about Spain, that many more of the things that we know about them they know about Spain. So it's easy to move around, and English too, and particularly in hotels and everywhere. And during colonial times in Morocco, the first part of the 20th century, there were many Americans living there. Barbara Hutton, the famous rich, poor, what was the title of the book of Poor Little Rich Girl. Yeah, she was living in Tangiers for a long time. She had a house, beautiful house there, which still is there. I don't know who owns it now. And writers like, I'll tell you, the one, The Shelter in the Sky, Paul Bowles and his wife were living there for a long while too. So I think until the end of their life, they died there. So, many other unknown, anonymous Americans. So there, and many, many British were living there too. So it's easy, and there aren't any evident problems around to visit Morocco. Yes?
I know that you wrote the book in Spanish. Are you happy with the translation in English?
If I'm happy with the translation into English, yes. Yeah.
Because it's very
Yeah, I think it's a very good translation. I think it's a beautiful translation. I didn't translate it.
We wrote that. We read that.
You wrote the Spanish.
That's why they have Rosalinda translate into English, since she's changing
She, what the translator does in order to recreate Rosalinda's discourse is the opposite to what I do. In my version in Spanish, Rosalinda speaks sort of a broken Spanish, introducing a lot of words in English. So what the translator did was exactly the opposite. She speaks in English, and every here and there, she integrates words in Spanish. Portu-Spanglish. Something like that is what Rosalinda talks. I think it's a very good translator. The translator was a British man. He came to see me to Spain. We were working together, clarifying things, solving technical problems. And then we kept in contact along the process. He wrote to me on many occasions. Whenever in doubt, he would ask. He was very, very respectful with the text. He was very careful with the translation. And I think he did a great job.
One more question?
What's your favorite
character? Who is my favorite character in the book? Yeah. Begbeder. Uh-huh. Yes, I don't know why. I have a crush on this man. I mean, it's quite difficult to believe it because he was a colonel in Franco's band and government. I mean, that's a terrible thing. But I think he was a fascinating man. Both in his public and private life. He was very unconventional in all senses. He was very different from everyone else. He had a lot of luminous aspects in his life, and he has also very dark aspects in his life. I mean, he's no hero at all. But I think he was a fascinating man who could have changed the history of Spain. He didn't, unfortunately, but still he tried. He tried at least. That's it, Derek. Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much for everything.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.